This is Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the mountainside grounds at Graymore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant, share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy to be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
The story of St. John Capistran, conversion in prison. St. John Capistran was born and grew to maturity during a period when the Christian world was torn asunder, and the papal supremacy and authority, which had stood for centuries, was threatened with disaster by the enemies of the Church. Capistran, who in 1409 had received his license from the University of Perugia to practice law, was fired with ambition to make a career of government service.
Bianca, I have great news. I've been offered a position of counselor at the royal court in Naples.
Oh, John, I'm so happy for you.
Of course, the friendship of my family and King Ladislaus may have been responsible,
but... No, it had very little to do with it. Everyone knows you made a brilliant record at Perugia. The king is very lucky to have you as a counselor.
King Ladislaus has a driving ambition to become king of Italy. In time, he may become the emperor.
And I will be the wife of John Capistran, the emperor's right hand.
Bianca, that's another thing I came to see you about. Perhaps it would be best to postpone our marriage.
Oh.
I'd like to have my doctorate in law as soon as possible, and that'll take a great deal of money.
But would not my dowry...
No, absolutely not. I wouldn't think of using a cent of the dowry. I must make my own way.
But you don't need the doctorate to practice law, do you?
Well, no, I don't, but it's a great honor. It gives one position.
Would it take long to earn it?
Only a few years.
But in Naples, you'll be so far away.
I'll come to see you. And I'll write to you. I'll be a few steps up the ladder in a much better position to marry and give you the things in life you deserve.
I'll be waiting for you here in San Valentino.
Thank you, Bianca. You're so understanding. Now I have to hurry. I must arrange to be in Naples by the end of the week.
The sessions of the royal court soon introduced John Capistran into delicate and confidential political secrets. But blinded by admiration for his king and his ambition to attain power and wealth, he would not or could not see that he was being used as a tool by Ladislaus.
Sire, in your case against Count Arthur and his son Ercole, I have made a thorough investigation.
And what are the conclusions?
The father undoubtedly is guilty of high treason.
And the son?
Sire, there is no evidence that will stand in law that the boy was connected with the plot against you.
That's too bad. I'd hoped the young count would be found guilty along with his father.
The boy should be released at once.
How can you be so sure the boy was not mixed up in the plot when the father is so treacherous?
Arthur took special precautions not to let his son know what he was doing.
But when we execute the father, the boy may at some future day try to revenge his death.
The law can't condemn a boy for some act which might take place in the future.
In other words, I have to wait till he pulls a dagger on me before I can do anything.
Until there is an actual threat against your welfare or an overt act, there can be no legal case against the boy.
Nevertheless, I would like to frighten Ercole so soundly that he'll never try to follow his father's steps.
How do you propose to do that?
The court will condemn them both to death.
What?
The father will be executed, but then the son will be told that he is innocent and released.
No. No, I don't like it, sire.
Come, come, Capistran, no harm will be done. The boy will rejoice that his life has been spared, and the sight of his father executed will teach him a lesson.
I would rather not see the court of law use...
It is my wish.
Well, then, of course, I will do as you say.
On February 14, 1410, Count Arthur was executed in the presence of his son. A few weeks later, King Ladislaus received John in his private chambers.
John, what's the trouble? You look ill.
I've just come from the hospital.
Well, then you must return.
Sire, it was not I who was ill.
No, then what were you doing?
Sire, I went there to see Ercole. He's dead.
Then I'll not have to worry about him revenging his father.
I feel as if I were responsible for his death.
Nonsense.
It was a mistake to force him to witness the execution of his father. He had a stroke the day after and never recovered.
Well, it's done. Forget about it.
That will not be easy, but...
But you will try. Now, I've called you here to tell you I'm advancing my army into Florentine territory.
But the Council of Cardinals is meeting at Pisa to see if they can end the schism within the church.
Exactly.
Any movement of troops on your part will wreck the council.
That is my objective.
But, sire, this situation where two popes try to rule is intolerable. The people want peace.
Ecclesiastical peace does not fit my plans.
You prefer this situation?
Why do you think I occupied Rome and the Papal States last year?
I assumed it was because of an expected attack by the French.
Ah, yes. They called me protector of the Pope, defender of Rome. Well, I can tell you now the French were in no position to attack. I myself spread the rumor that they were threatening.
I begin to see, sire.
Good.
With the church weakened by internal strife, the time is ripe to strip her of her possessions.
Yes. There is no reason why the church should control the Papal States. Already people refer to me as the King of Rome. The next step is to become King of Italy. And then, Emperor.
I understand.
And approve.
I approve.
Good. There'll be innumerable legal complications arising, and I want it to appear that I am always on the right side of the law. After this Florentine adventure, we will talk again. And there'll be a promotion for you.
When Ladislaus moved into Florentine territory, he found the people prepared to meet him, and he withdrew. The council met and deposed both popes and elected Alexander V. But far from attaining unity, the church found itself with three popes. Ladislaus supported the Roman pope, but Louis of Anjou now marched to Rome, defeated Ladislaus, and put the Pisan pope, John 23rd, on the throne. Pope John stripped Ladislaus of his dominion over Naples and then excommunicated him. However, Louis of Anjou now suffered reverses. Provisions failed, his soldiers deserted, and went over to the enemy.
John, I'm about to sign a peace treaty with Pope John, and I want you to check it.
Treaty with Pope John? But he was put in Rome by force of arms.
And I reached the conclusion that he is the rightful pope elected by divine inspiration.
Then you will withdraw your support from the Roman pontiff? What will become of him?
He'll have to look out for himself.
Sire, I would suggest that you permit the church to settle their internal affairs. Accept the decisions of the council.
That's not the kind of advice I expect from my legal advisors. The pope is perfectly willing to make the treaty.
What will be your reward?
Four cities in the Papal States as security for the 220,000 florins I've advanced him. And you'll be pleased to know that your old university town of Perugia is included. How would you like to go back there?
I would welcome it very much.
Then you will go. The captain of the city, whom I've just appointed, has asked that you be the judge of Perugia.
Thank you, sire, for your confidence.
A strong hand will be needed after the recent disturbances.
Sire, something more will be needed if the judge of Perugia is to administer justice.
And what is that?
A free hand, as well as a strong.
The people of Perugia like the new judge. He was strict, but impartial and courageous, and kind to the poor. Capistran was aware of the plans of Ladislaus, now forging ahead to dominate all Italy. Soon, Ladislaus betrayed his confederate, Pope John the 23rd, by invading the Papal States and forcing the Pope and his cardinals to flee to Florence for protection. Then suddenly, Ladislaus died. There was no fit successor, and troubles began at once. The captain fled from Perugia, and the people themselves elected Judge Capistran to take his place.
Oh, John, it was a beautiful wedding. The people, the music, the gifts.
Yes. Yes, Bianca, it was a beautiful wedding.
What is it, John? You seem so preoccupied on this, our wedding night.
No. No, dear, it's nothing.
Share your thoughts with me.
I'm judge and captain of an important city.
But you're not satisfied.
I was loyal to my king. But there were times when I did things against my nature.
Unfair things, you mean?
And unjust. Especially against the church, which needs unity.
But now that the king's dead, you may be able to make amends.
Yes, perhaps I can. I would like to go on with the law to study and attain my doctorate.
And you will.
Bianca, you've waited a long time for this wedding.
But now that I'm married to you, it seems such a short time.
My dear, could you understand if I left you now tonight and returned to Perugia?
Left me? John?
Yes, before our marriage is consummated. Please try to understand. It's a feeling I have that I should wait.
Perhaps you're trying to say that we've waited too long.
I don't know. It's that I want to be absolutely fair to you. To know what this inner feeling is before I come to you as your husband.
Then you must go, John. Come to me when you're sure.
It was now 1415, and Judge Capistran was 30 years old. The schism within the church still existed, and the rival and ambitious kings and lords continued to use the schism to advance their own power. As Capistran was about to depart for his native city on an important visit, a high official was ushered into the room where Capistran was packing his trunk.
Roberto.
John, I come in haste from the meeting of citizens. Malatesta of Rimini is preparing to seize Perugia.
Oh, yes, since the Council of Constance has deposed Pope John, he no doubt thinks the time is right to invade.
You must stop him.
Oh, no. I'm packing to go to Capistrano and raise the money for my doctorate of laws.
John, you're the only man who can influence the Count. The freedom of our city is at stake.
Roberto, do you realize how long I've waited?
The high respect you enjoy with the citizens will vanish if you leave them. And if Perugia falls to Malatesta, you will no longer be a judge.
I don't seem to have much choice.
In with you.
I demand an explanation. I'm Judge Capistran of Perugia. I was on my way to Count Malatesta when ruffians seized me.
Oh, so you're a judge. Since you're so important, my lord will get a good price for your ransom.
Who is your lord?
Inside. You're at Brufa. That's all you need to know.
Will you tell your master who I am? Tell him it's urgent that I see Count Malatesta before he invades.
Oh, I'll tell him gladly. But since my master was exiled from your city, I doubt whether he'll be interested in its fate.
Convinced his life was in danger, Capistran planned an escape. He tore his bed linen and cloak into strips and lowered himself from a window. When he was about halfway down, he fell to the ground and suffered a broken hip. Next morning, he was found, taken back to prison, and put in a dungeon, knee-deep in water, and fastened with an iron chain around his waist.
I see you escape now.
Send the doctor. I'm in terrible pain. My hip.
Whose fault is that?
No. Don't leave me like this. I'll die.
After 3 days of terrible pain, his strength left him, and he fell into a faint. Suddenly, he was awakened.
What is it? The light. I must be free. You. Who are you? If you are real, the name of heaven speaks to me. No, you're not real. I'm going insane. Get out of here! Wait. I know that habit. You're a Franciscan. You've come to torment me. What do you want of me? Speak. Say something. Don't stand like an ox. Speak. Jailer. Jailer!
What's this noise? Can't I get a rest? What do you want? Who's been here?
Then it was real. I saw a Franciscan friar.
Your hair. He cut your hair.
It has been cut. Shaved.
Like a Franciscan. Oh, but it's impossible. No one could come here without my knowledge.
I saw him as plainly as I see you.
What did he say?
Nothing.
It's a miracle. I must report it to my lord. You must tell him what you saw. Say, you're not a Franciscan in disguise.
I tell you, I'm Judge Capistran. Do I look like a begging friar?
You do now. All you need is to wear the habit.
John's treatment became milder. He was given medical attention. But it seemed that the world outside had forgotten him. Now he had time for contemplation of the seeming miracle of his close-cropped hair. He regarded the visitation as an unmistakable hint that he should become a Franciscan. But the very idea made him shudder. Already the jailer was regarding John as a Franciscan.
Oh, good morning, Father.
Will you please not call me that?
Oh, very well. But why does it upset you so?
I'm not upset. I'm in constant pain. The days go by and I hear nothing about my ransom. The idea that I become a friar is too fantastic even to think about. I'm about to become a doctor of laws. I've no religious leaning, never have had.
Then you will go back when you're released and take up where you left off?
Yes. Why do you shake your head?
You've changed greatly since coming here, especially since the vision. It worries you far more than you pretend.
I'm sure it was but my imagination brought on by suffering.
Then how do you account for the cropped head?
I don't account for it. I don't know. Now leave me. I don't want to talk about it.
All right, I'm going. I'm not supposed to do it, but if you wish to write a letter to your wife, I'll smuggle it out.
Not married. I mean... Oh, never mind, but thank you, jailer.
John Capistran.
Who is it? Oh, you again. What do you want of me?
Why are you so obstinate?
You must know what you wish is impossible. I've sinned many times. To this day, I've never been to Holy Communion.
God knows these things.
All my life, I served my king, even when he was trying to destroy the authority of the church.
That was to prepare you to serve God now.
How? I'm prepared to do anything God demands of me.
Leave everything and follow our Lord in the habit I wear.
Jailer, will you get me brown cloth such as the Franciscans wear and needle and thread?
What are you going to do, turn tailor?
I wish to make a Franciscan habit to wear.
Oh, your man has come again.
Yes. I'm to become a Franciscan. Get the cloth. I will pay you when I'm released.
I will do it.
And when I've made the habit, go to the monastery and ask one of the friars if he will visit a man in prison.
This way, Father.
My eyes are not used to the dimness.
Over here, Father.
Ah. To what order does this habit belong?
It's Franciscan. I made it myself.
Why? You have no right to the habit.
I must join your order.
You, Judge Capistran, wish to become a Franciscan?
As quickly as possible.
Well, forgive me, but I find it hard to believe that one in your position...
Father, when I entered this prison, becoming a friar was the thing furthest from my thoughts.
I understand. You've been here long and you have suffered, and now...
Father, I am not a disappointed man, seeking a refuge from the world in the church. I must become a Franciscan to serve God.
I notice you say, must become.
Yes. I received a summons from one of your order.
What kind of a summons?
On July 22nd, the Feast of Mary Magdalene, here in this cell, a member of your order appeared and directed me to join.
I see. Then you cropped your hair and became as you are now.
No. The first time the friar visited me, he said nothing. I reached out to touch him, but he vanished. When I felt my hair, it was cropped as you see it now.
I can swear to it, Father. No one entered his cell. He had nothing with which to cut his hair.
Signore, the life of a Franciscan is hard. You must give up all possessions, all ties with the world. You will have...
I am not concerned with what I must give up. I tell you, I have no choice in the matter. I am but obeying the will of God. I tell you, when this vision first appeared, I beat my hands against the wall until they were covered with blood. I cried out, no, no, I'll never become a friar. It was no use. In the end, I surrendered. And now I tell you, in all humility, I must become a Franciscan.
Signore, I am inclined to believe you. But there is only one thing that causes me to question it.
What is that?
You are married, and therefore could not enter the order.
Yes, I am legally married. However, that marriage was never consummated. I left my bride on our wedding night. I could give no reason, but now I know that even then, something was directing my life toward this moment.
Well, according to church law, marriage contracted but not consummated can be dissolved by one partner alone, on condition of entrance into a religious order.
I've but little knowledge of church law. Certainly that was not in my mind when I left my bride.
And yet, the most serious obstacle to entrance into the order has been met.
Then you'll make the necessary arrangements.
Yes. A jailer, tell the Count that if he will release the prisoner, I will remain in his cell as a hostage until his ransom is paid.
The ransom was soon paid. Capistran, accompanied by his spiritual advisor, hurried to Perugia and was welcomed by his friends. Then he hurried to Capistrano to tell his wife of his unalterable resolution to become a Franciscan. His young wife made no objection, but announced that she would follow his example and remain a virgin. He then disposed of his property. Then came the public farewell. According to the custom of the time, he mounted backwards on a donkey, put on a fool's cap covered with the crimes with which he considered himself guilty, and rode out of town. His friends were ashamed. The urchins stoned him, and many in the crowd shouted, "He was a fool."